Munoz ready. He blows it past him with the gas over the plate, and the Mariners win it. A five-out save for Andrés Munoz.
And the Royals fall to the Mariners yesterday by a final score of 4-2. Mariners win the three-game series, 2-1. And welcome to the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Keeper Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. As the Royals, not a lot of offense yesterday, shut down through the first five innings. Bobby Witt Jr. with a sack fly in the sixth put the Royals on the board. Royals were down 3-2. Runner at second, Vinny Pascatino striking out in the top of the eighth. Insurance run, bottom of the eighth for the Mariners, and they go on to win it by a final of 4-2. Matt Cotrero on Alec Marsh, who continues to pitch well as a fifth starter.
He's locating better, and when he locates, they're going to be some strike to ball. They're going to be just above, just below, and he's also throwing his sinker a little bit, and that gets guys thinking in a little bit. His stuff was good. I mean, he's got a couple long innings there to get his pitch count up, but he stayed in there. He battled. He kept him to two runs and gave us a good chance to win.
So the Royals are 26-19. They have today off. They start a three-game series with the A's tomorrow in KC. The Royals had 26 wins last year at the All-Star break. They have won 26 games by May 14th this year. So I'd say they are trending in the right direction and certainly are right there near the top of the American League Central. Coming up on the ticket, we'll talk to or hear from Ryan Isabel and Steve Tiernan, track coaches for Beloit and Osborne, respectively. There's a new girls head basketball coach at Smith Center, Brandon Raby. Is there anyone coming back that's actually going to coach from last year to this year? Because we have had a plethora of coaching changes in North Central Kansas. There's one school that basically has all of their sports are open. High school. Alma Wabunzi, Basically every sport imaginable. If you want to coach, let me tell you something. If you sit here and say, I really want to coach, but I don't know, are there any openings? Well, you're a dunce, and you probably shouldn't coach because you're not very smart, because there's tons of coaching opportunities. And we've talked about this before, about the shortage of officials. But maybe we've been a little bit off base. I mean, not off base with that. There is a shortage of officials. That's a fact. But maybe the growing or bigger problem is becoming lack of coaches. Because, and once again, you know who we can blame for that. The same people we blame for the shortage of officials. And it's not the officials' fault. It's not the coaches' fault. And these schools, you can sit here and you can cry, you know, about we don't have any money, we don't have any budget, blah, blah, blah. But when you lowball people to coach, you don't have any idea what it's like to coach. You are hoping that somebody is dumb enough to take on a job that is more stressful than ever before, and you want to pay them less or what it used to be back 10 years ago. You're going to have to step up to the plate and pay somebody a decent amount of money in a supplemental contract for people to coach. And if you, and you know what? You have to adjust. You know, minimum wage adjusted. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of companies now are hiring. Fast food restaurants, for instance, used to be $7.50 an hour. Our restaurants, you waited tables, $2.25 an hour, plus tips. And now, I mean, I saw in Salina, Spangles, I think, starting at $12 an hour, or $15 an hour. And McDonald's, I think, is $15 an hour. There's other places, it's $18-$20 an hour. Listen, if you need somebody to coach a sports team, you better step up to the plate and you better find a little bit more money. I don't know what you got to do. And I know it's not easy budgeting in schools. Trust me, I get it. It's not easy and some of your stuff's falling apart and then you're looking for financial help, whether it be grants, whether it be a bond, whatever it might be. I understand all of that. And by the way, if you fire a coach and you don't have a plan, you're an idiot. Okay, if you fire a coach and you force them out, whether it's your school board that forces them out or whether you're just tired of that coach, you better have somebody already lined up ready to go. Because if you don't, you're an idiot. And I can think of one school, Dustin, I was talking about yesterday, and it's not in our listing area, but they blew out an outstanding coach because apparently somebody was upset, the wrong person or people.
They weren't having enough fun anymore.
Weren't having any fun anymore, even though they continue to win. But, you know, winning's not important until they're having fun but not winning. Then people say, we're not winning anymore. Yeah, but they're having fun. Yeah, but who cares about fun? We need to win. Okay, now we're winning. Yeah, but they're not having fun. What the hell? Why don't you go grab a whistle and coach? Okay, so you get the wrong people, you upset. They get blown out of their positions. And then you're scrambling because you apparently didn't think it through, which means terrific leadership on your part, to, or you caved to a person that's a bully. And so you get a coach forced out, and there's some really good coaches that have been forced out over the years, and there have been more lately, the last few years. Or coaches just get fed up, and they're like, I'm done, because of all the BS that goes with it. And on top of that, not only do they deal with all the stress, all the BS, all, and then if the wrong person on the school board, the wrong person within the school gets upset, or the rich person in the community doesn't that donates to the school gets upset. Well, and this is no different than college, let's be honest about it, okay, from that standpoint. If your donors dry up, guess what? Your coach is going to get fired. I don't care how good he is. If the donors don't shell out the money, listen, Jerome Tang suddenly, you know, upsets a whole bunch of donors, even if he's probably winning decently, he's gone. Because you can't upset the donors. The donors, the rich people have a lot of power in this world. Everybody knows that. You should. But when you push out a coach, you should have a plan B. You should have a plan A, and then a plan B, and then maybe even a plan C. And there are some places that don't even have a plan A. And so here's a thought. Don't fire the coach until you have plan A all lined up, locked, and loaded. And if you don't, then just stick with what you got. And you know what? The bully on the street's just going to have to shut the hell up and back off, or they can be loud, but don't let the minority rule the majority. But that's what we do. And oh yeah, here's the thing. I haven't even mentioned the salary yet. So you expect a whole bunch of people to come in and coach with all the scrutiny. Nowadays, it's not good enough for kids to play. Now they got to have a lot of fun and win. Well, gee, lollipops and rainbows. You know, the real world and the real life, you don't always have fun. You don't always win every day. Things don't go your way every day. So get braced for the future when you're in high school, okay? Because you're supposed to be young women and men, right?
So that used to be the point of it.
That was the whole point. So if you're going to start blowing people out, here's an idea. You better go ahead and go find a donor. Get somebody to go get somebody and pay them more money, because we've done the math. And coaches really should do this. I tell you what, I know coaches have enough on their plate already, the ones that still are coaching. Do me a favor, coaches, and this would really be cool. Keep track of your hours. Seriously, keep track of your hours. Keep track of your hours with summer camps, okay? Keep track of your hours with any kind of extra instruction. Keep track of when you start practice at 3:30 and go to 6, and then you hang around till 6:30 so kids can shoot extra. And you're there at 3:15 in case kids get there a little bit early. And then count all the travel. Count those hours to traveling on road trips. And that doesn't count just getting on the bus. I'm talking about being at the school before the bus leaves to make sure everything is ready. Okay? Then I want coaches to also keep track of their hours when it comes to when they're breaking down game film, which is outside of practice time. And oh yeah, you know what, coaches? To be quite fair to you, you should also count the time and the hours when you are lying in bed and can't sleep because you lost a game or won a game but wanted something different, or you're stressing because some dumbass parent goes off on you and it was a great night and you won by 20 and everything went perfectly, but some parent's mad because little Johnny didn't play as much as I thought he would, even though I know he's not that good, but I don't want to admit it. And don't care that you won. All they care about is their little boy, their little girl. And let's go ahead and add those hours into the equation, because that is part of the job, right? You have to deal with this. Well, it sounds like I'm really... Don't you want to be a coach right now, based on everything I'm telling you? I mean, it sounds so positive. Okay, so then I want the coaches, moving forward, I want you to turn in your hours. At the end of the sports season, I don't care what sport it is, golf, baseball, softball, football, volleyball, basketball, I don't care what sport it is. Turn in your hours. Get your supplemental contract out. Of course, you already know what you made, but just to double check and see that $3,000 supplemental contract, $2,500, $3,500, whatever it is. Divide that by the hours you work. And then go to that dumbass person that's trying to fire you and say, here's the job description and here's the hours it takes and here you go. You're the one that forced me out. Here is what it takes. And if you think you can do it more efficiently and can do it for half the hours, you're still only going to make $1.65 an hour. The people that force coaches out think they have all the answers and they don't know jack crap. Okay? They think they do. They don't. And what's amazing is there's some that actually have coached at some level, even youth baseball or whatever, and somehow they forgot what it was like to be a coach, and that's so convenient. Why do we have a shortage of coaches? It goes to everything I just said. Parents are the biggest reason we have a shortage in coaches. And you know what? Those parents don't want to step up to the plate. And by the way, when I'm talking about these parents, I'm not necessarily talking about you that's listening to the show right now. You might be the majority, because I do believe the majority of parents are good. A majority of parents get it. They might, you know, grumble a little bit from time to time.
There's some selfishness there.
Sure. Yeah. Okay? And I think every parent does that.
Yeah.
Okay? I get that. But what I'm saying is the ones that rock the boat, the one that disrupt everything, they mess up the chemistry of the team, or they mess up all kinds of problems, and they cause all kinds of problems, and they don't even play on the team. And many times the kids themselves just want to play and don't want you interfering. They want you to shut the hell up. But the kids don't have the guts to tell you that because they live under your roof, and they don't want to upset you. So in a way, you're kind of bullying your kid as well. So that's terrific parenting, by the way. So you don't have the time to coach, but you have the time to bellyache, bitch, and whine and complain about all the things that the coach doesn't do right for your kid. Okay? And I get it. We all complain probably quietly, you know, this and that. But there's those people that just take over. They're loud. They're obnoxious. They're mean. And they think they can bully everybody into doing whatever they want. And you know what's sad is you got administrations that cave. You've got administrations that don't stand up for what's right. You've got upper level people. You've got board members that don't stand up for what's right. You get swayed on your votes. You rig a vote. I went through that in high school myself. Rig a vote to make sure that your coach doesn't get rehired or what's the word I'm saying, that he let his contract expire. But he wasn't fired. Oh, dear God. So you sit here and the people that are complaining so much about their kid not getting to play as much, or their kid doesn't start, or their kid starts, but he's not the featured kid. It's like, dear God, just take everybody off the floor and let little Johnny play 1-on-5 in basketball and see how it goes for you. You know what? How about you be a pitcher, but you don't have a catcher? See how that goes for you. Here's an idea. How about you just go ahead and have practice without any coaches and see how that goes for you? Because we're getting to the point where that might be what'll have to happen. Or you're going to have a babysitter. You're going to have somebody
sponsor
that's going to coach.
Instead of a coach.
You're going to have a sponsor. You're going to have a coach, but not a coach. It's going to be somebody that doesn't know what the hell's going on, don't know how to run a practice, but no fault of their own, at least they stepped up, and they're like, I'll take the supplemental money. Great. And they're not going to put much into it. And you're going to have a crappy program. And you're going to have instability. And you're going to have a change in coaching every single year, every other year. And you're not going to win consistently when you keep jerking around coaches. So you wonder why a whole bunch of coaches are stepping away in this area, and it ain't just North Central Kansas. It's across the country and different parts of this state as well. There's reasons for it. One, you can go in any order you want. I don't care what order you want to go in. You can say number one reason, burnout. Number two reason, stress. Number three reason, not getting paid enough. Number four, putting in more hours than they should, but they care. Number five, parents. Number six, who knows? The kids themselves. Maybe they're not respecting coaches because mom and dad are always questioning and ripping the coaches when they get home for practice. I'll tell you one for you. I was coaching youth baseball here recently, and we were at a tournament in Salina. And we were playing a team that was from, I believe, Great Bend. And there was I was coaching first base, okay? So we're on offense. So the other team's on defense. And the kid's at first base. And the head coach, or the head coach at that tournament, he says to the first baseman, hey, you need to get a couple steps further off the bag and back up a step and then creep in. You know what the kid said? He goes, well, that's not what my dad told me. And the coach said, is he coaching? Do what I tell you. And I'm like, amen, brother.
Yeah.
Amen, brother. That's the thing. Parents, you need to back off a little bit. Okay? Yelling all the time during your kids' games is just making it harder. If you want to yell words of encouragement, like, all right, you missed the free throw. That's all right. You got the next one, kiddo. You got it. That's different. But when you're yelling at the kids to do everything they're supposed to do when the coaches are there for a reason, and you're not at practice coaching, yeah, but then suddenly you want to become the coach from the sideline, you're not helping the coaches that volunteer that don't get paid, or the coaches that get paid supplemental money from school districts and come out to like 10 cents an hour if you're lucky. But you have all the answers. You've never been to practice, or you've been to one, so you know everything, right? Or your kid tells you, you don't think it's going to be one-sided what your kid's going to tell you. And here's the other thing. If you have a problem with a coach, go to the coach. Don't go to the school board immediately. Don't go to the person with power that so you can get rid of the coach. Don't just believe your kid to be honest all the time, because nobody's kid is. Why don't you just go, like, be a man, be a woman, be an adult, call the coach up, because trust me, they have the number,
mm-hmm.
especially in small communities. Hell, you even know where they live. Not mm-hmm. saying you show up unannounced at their house. That would be ridiculous. But maybe you say, hey, can we meet sometime? I'll buy you breakfast or whatever it might be. But you just be an adult and go one-on-one and say, hey, coach, I've got some concerns. I just want to voice them out to you instead of throwing it on social media. Well, I don't want to make your job any tougher. I understand it's a tough job. There's probably things I don't understand. Speaking of that, I don't understand this. Could you explain it to me? You know what? I think maybe coaches, there'd be my some that still wouldn't like that. But I think most would at least go, well, at least we're talking about it. Because what's the biggest problem that happens with a lot of these situations? Lack of communication.
Mm-hmm.
And that is true of anything we do in life, right? It is one of my biggest pet peeves is lack of communication. I am so damn tired, ladies and gentlemen, so freaking tired of people expecting me to read their minds. I have it in my family. I have it with some people I know. And I'm supposed to know exactly what they're thinking when they're thinking it. And those people are problems. Those people are extremely selfish. They're extremely selfish because the world revolves around them and perhaps their kid. And that's the thing. It's no different than when you go into a restaurant and you got a whole bunch of people and there's one or two waitresses and you act like you're the only one that matters when everybody else, some of them have been waiting longer than you and you're the one that's going to cause the stink. You know what that is? That's being selfish. It's all about you. You don't give a crap about anybody else around you. It's about me, me, I. And then you probably have the audacity to tell your kids when you get home, hey, there's no I in team. Well, what do you mean, Dad? You were in the restaurant and you made it about you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Or you complain about everything and I don't even care, Dad. I'm out, but I don't even want to be playing. But you kind of forced me to go out. So you wonder why all these coaches are dropping like flies for many things I just said. And there's probably some things I'm missing. And maybe Dusty will fill in those blanks.
Yeah, from that aspect of coaches leaving and not wanting to do it anymore. I think you've hit pretty much everything I would have said. Now, I do, and just clarifying a little bit about the Wabunzi situation, a couple of those coaches got opportunities at bigger schools
right.
and better jobs. So that goes into it, too. That's a factor that goes into making a decision to, either maybe better your situation or you've just dreamed of having a job at a bigger class school or whatever that might be. But, there's a lot of different reasons why people would step away from the job that they currently have as a coach. But it is alarming when you see that many at Wabunzi that have left in one season.
Or one look at our area now.
Season, and then all of the stories that I've done this spring.
You've had one like every
coach,
day,
I know,
it seems.
It feels like it does. And it started. I'm blaming Shauna. She's no. No, it's, it did.
Just it, drive over,
yeah,
man.
It did, though. It started with Shauna Remus, with the Belay girls, and then it just seemed like it, day after day after day, we were getting a new one. And like I said yesterday, like 67% of the coaches in the NCAA boys basketball, rolled over here during the offseason.
About half the girls.
Yeah, Sacred Heart and Beloit are the only ones that are the same still right now. So it's like you're kind of looking at everything, and the girls' coaches rolling over too. And
then you look at the NPL.
Now you filled some of these, and yeah, now you're seeing Thunder Ridge with both of their coaches resigning, and again, reasons there are legit family. Like a lot of people would be like question some of that. Like that seems to be the answer all the time, but that's legit that they want to see their grandkids and kids, and the one coach is coming up from Hayes and commuting every day to Kensington to coach and be a parent. So it's like those things make sense, and that's why they step away, right? So there's so many different reasons that it is happening right now, and it's a lot of at the smaller schools, unless we're talking about the unruly parents and things like that. At the smaller schools, I think most of it is we're doing too much, and that's Drew Dusky, right? Like, so he's been coaching all
but let me stop you. Why is he doing too much? Because people don't want to step up
exactly.
and do anything, but they really have plenty of time to criticize.
Exactly. And that's the thing is like
so you really have to applaud people like Drew Dusky and many
absolutely.
Other coaches. I know Steve Tiernan when he was at Baileyville B&B, he was coaching track and field, football, and girls basketball. He never had a break.
He's coaching football at Osborne. Mm-hmm. He stepped up and volunteered to help with junior high basketball
mm-hmm.
this year.
Yeah, people forget there's junior high sports
too. And he's coaching track and field, so
yes.
he's doing the same thing right now
there
that he was
go.
Doing then.
Yeah.
He's not had a breather. Drew has not had a breather this year coaching yeah. head coach football basketball for the boys and then helping with track and field. And moving forward, it looks like he'll probably be the track and field head coach next year. So he wants a little time off and a little break there during the fall with football.
So that means somebody's got to step in. Somebody's got to
step in and do that. And we're not even just talking about head coaching either.
Sure.
We're talking about people. You need a staff.
Yes.
And you got to have assistant coaches that'll step up and do things. And you know, you've got guys that, and Scott Germark actually doing the same thing this year. He was an assistant football, girls basketball, and head track and field coach over at Lakeside. And so that's another guy that was coaching all season long.
All you got to do is look at Jason Wilson. Jason Wilson over Osborne. For crying out loud, he's the principal and girls and boys basketball coach.
Yeah.
I bet he's stressed out a lot. Oh, yeah, I guarantee you, he probably ain't getting paid enough for those two jobs of the girls and boys basketball coach.
Yeah.
Maybe administration, it's good, but.
And you know, I've built a relationship pretty quickly with Jason, and you know, you ask him for things, and man, he's going to be there to help you out, but he's got a lot on his plate, and everybody does at these small schools. You know, we're singling out a lot of names in the coaching profession and world, but. There's people at small schools, whether they're sponsoring or they're the advisor for FFA or, you know, K's or sponsor, whatever they're doing, there's a lot of people that are like extending themselves past anything that they would ever need to do to feel good about themselves and to support the district that they're in. But they do that because other people, like you said, won't step up and do it. Or it's a vocation for some of them, but none of them are being paid the correct amount.
No.
There's no question about that. So it is...
We're leaving out an important portion as well. A lot, not all, but a lot of these people are also teaching all day long.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're teaching, grading papers, taking care of kids. I mean, like, for instance, you know, Shauna Remus coaches fourth grade. Or not coaches, but sometimes. She teaches fourth grade, okay?
Yeah.
Now, listen, I'm going to tell you, I'm around my kids for 4 hours in a row. I'm exhausted sometimes. Shauna Remus, she's just an example, is a fourth grade teacher and a damn good fourth grade teacher.
Yeah.
And she's got 20 kids or whatever it is in her class, and she's got to deal with them from 8 a.m. to about 3:25 p.m. and then slide into basketball practice, adjust to teenagers, and coach them, and then gets home at what, 7? And then does it all over the next day. So a lot of people may be listening going, well, yeah, that coaching part, that's a lot to put on their plate, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, I left out the full-time job.
Absolutely.
That's the coaching is a side job. It's a supplemental thing. It is not even close to their full-time job. I had somebody tell me a long time ago, said, if you're a young teacher, you should not mess with coaching until you are solidly in a place where you feel comfortable as a teacher. Don't risk getting fired as a teacher, even though that should be more important than athletics.
Yeah,
should be.
Absolutely.
But it isn't always. But some people forget about that they have a day. Right. Think about this. You do your regular job, and now you're going to go coach for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And then you're going to travel 3 nights a week. I mean, by the way, it's not just varsity sports. When you're in high school, you got to still do a freshman, organize, coordinate, JV. I'm just talking basketball, for instance, volleyball, same way. You got football, you got freshman football, JV football, all these sports. You got JV tennis, varsity tennis, JV golf, varsity golf, freshman, whatever. There's so much more. Now, we didn't even talk much about it. You referred to it briefly. There's junior high sports. Here's the other thing. Then you get somebody to step up to be the head coach, but if nobody else wants to be on your staff, nobody else wants to take the time, put the time in, then guess what? It's harder to have really good practices when it's just you. If you got 16 kids in basketball, you know what would be really nice? Same thing in baseball. Is you need station work. You need to be doing different things. Well, you have two eyes as one coach. You really need two or three people to help you out so that you can break it down and really give kids what they really need to do to get better at baseball, softball, whatever the sport may be. You know, football, you want to have somebody. You know, by the way, it seems like football staff always has quite a few coaching football. Not always, but it seems like. It's the other sports that seem to suffer in regards to a lack of coaches. But football, you got a line coach, you got a defensive guy, you got a secondary person, you got an offensive guy, and there's somebody that does each grouping, right? In football, they specialize, and they're delegated to do those things. But then you get in some of these other sports, and it's like, we got a head coach, but no assistants. Gee, I'm still getting paid the same amount of money, and I'm doing the job of what three or four coaches would do on a staff. So I guess the point is, we got Brandon Raby on, and he's coming up, and Brandon's like, Jesus, what did I just get myself into after listening to Dinas and Gershner? But I give Brandon Raby a ton of credit that he's stepping up to be the head coach. Now, not only is it tough to be a head coach, but now you follow, in a situation like this, a legend.
Yeah.
And by the way, Nick Lynn is a dinosaur. Roger Barta, Nick Lynn, you know, those type of coaches, C.J. Hamilton, Silver Lake, those coaches are dinosaurs. Now, I don't mean to make them sound old and extinct, but the point is they've been in it for so long, coaching multiple sports in many cases for so many years, put in so much time. They should have a plaque and a statue erected outside every stadium that they've coached at, because they deserve it. And those people are not; those are becoming extinct. Coaches are getting in now. I don't think there's going to be a lot of them coaching for 35 years because of all the things that we mentioned earlier. You're just eventually going to get burnt out. You're either going to get burnt out, fed up, tired of it, or maybe, like you said, you don't feel appreciated. Go somewhere where they actually won't lowball you and actually, you know, go work where you're appreciated and taken care of. And so it is not easy to be a coach. And so I go back to the very initial premise, and I'm sorry I went off the left field here for a little bit, but people need to understand that not only is there a shortage of officials, there is a shortage of coaches. And not only is there a shortage of coaches, you may say, well, every coaching position is filled. That doesn't mean it's the best quality of coaches, because some are just being a babysitter because nobody else will step up and do it. So then guess what happens? Just like officiating, where you get watered down. You got people officiating, but, well, I've heard this. Well, these guys shouldn't be reffing varsity sports. Well, they wouldn't, but since you yelled at all these other people and got them to retire early or quit, they have to do varsity when they should be doing in JV. That's no different sometimes in coaching. You know, somebody might be a head coach and have no business being a head coach. They should be an assistant, learn for a few years, become a head coach, but they're forced into being a head coach because none of those people that are so critical and think they have all the answers are willing to step up a plate, grab a whistle, and coach. So it's a trickle-down effect when it comes to all that. Mm-hmm. But we'll get to that coming up in a little bit. We'll hear from Brandon Raby, and he just called in and said, I've changed my mind. But we're going to start with Athlete of the Week. Then we're going to hear from Ryan Isbell, Steve Tiernan, because we got regional track today. And then the Chiefs schedule came out. We'll break that down a little bit. And then the NBA NHL playoffs. So we'll throw it to Dusty here with the Athlete of the Week, which is a unique one because it is cycling.
Yeah, Tipton freshman Nora Ellens has been named the NCKSports.com Cunningham Fiber Athlete of the Week. She's been having an outstanding spring in cycling with the NCK Raptors, who compete in the Kansas League of the National Interscholastic Cycling Association. Typically, individuals race based upon their grade in school, and since Nora's a freshman, she would normally be running and racing and cycling with the freshmen. But when you get into high school, you can petition to be in either the higher JV or varsity classes. This is a definite step up no matter what if you get into either one of these. And as a freshman, Ellens was approved for the higher JV class, and man, she's been taking advantage of it, competing in three races this spring, and she's finished in first in every one of them. This past weekend of the Snake Farm Showdown in north of Lawrence, she had an outstanding day, completed four laps on the tough 3.5 mile course in a time of 1 hour 32 minutes 39 seconds 0.44, which was the fastest time amongst all the high school girls that competed there, whether it be varsity, JV, or whatever it was. So she was at the top of the leaderboard there around all high school classes in the state, and they compete with athletes all over the state. April 21st, Rural Glen Elder, she took first place in the JV girls race as well, and then on April 7th, she competed at Wilson Lake and took first place in that race also. And Ellens is the current points leader in her JV class there, and wears the leader's jersey during the race now. And she does train at Switchback Trail there at Wilson Lake. And she's been it's been a busy spring for Nora too, because she's not just doing the cycling. She also has competed for Tipton Catholic High School in both golf and track and field as well. So she's doing a lot this spring, and very worthy of this Athlete of the Week. Nora Ellens from Tipton, the freshman, our Athlete of the Week from NCKSSports.com and Cunningham Fiber. You can read more about that at NCKSSports.com.
Outstanding. Congratulations to Nora. All right, regional track is today. We'll have reports starting about 2 o'clock today, and every half hour there on after. We got regional track meets at various locations, and Dusty, you can break that down, and then we'll hear from some of the coaches.
Yeah, Beloit's hosting the 3A regional track and field meet today. 16 teams competing there, and a lot of athletes that have a chance to make it back to state for the Beloit girls. They've won every single meet that they've competed in this year. It'll be a battle today. They're already dealing with a couple injuries that might hinder a little bit of their point performance, and we'll hear about the projections coming up from Coach Isbell here in a little bit for Beloit. Again, they are hosting the 3A regional. They have 11 different individual events that will look to repeat as state qualifiers. Tatum Seifert at the top of that list is a returning champion, 3A girls discus and shot put. So Beloit competing there. By the way, if you want to see all the teams that are competing at these regionals, check out the regional assignments at NCKSSports.com. as well. Class 1A, all of our area teams are in Washington today, the Washington County Regional. Osborne's had a great season. Both boys and girls won the MPL titles last week in Tescott, and we'll hear from their coach Steve Tiernan coming up as well. Osborne has a great opportunity to qualify a lot for the state tournament, or state meet, I should say, coming up next weekend in Wichita. And again, all the area 1A teams, Lakeside, Rock Hill, St. John's, Tipton, Thunder Ridge, Sylvan Lucas, Pike Valley, Glasgow, and Miltonville all competing there. Field events, by the way, in Beloit start at 1:30 today. Field events will start at 1 o'clock in Washington, and they'll also start at 1 o'clock in Class 2A out at Smith Center today, or out at Hill City, I should say, today. Smith Center and Lincoln from the area, both at that Hill City 2A regional. Madison Howland is definitely the feature story there, as she ranks number one in the state in both the 1,600 and 3,200-meter runs, and the state cross-country champion in the fall. She's had a great season and first year of her career as far as high school is concerned in those distance runs. Hill City is the spot today, with Smith Center and Lincoln competing from the area. As Wade said, we will have reports coming up a little after 2 o'clock. Will be the first report, and then each half hour after that until we get finished up here this evening with regional track and field. And I'll hopefully post some links too for live results coming up before we start coverage here this afternoon from Beloit.
In a moment, we'll hear from Ryan Isbell and also from Steve Tiernan. But just to go back to what we were just talking about, this is so crazy. It just dropped up on my feed here. Sacred Heart football team is now looking for its fourth head football coach in four seasons. One every year for the last four seasons. Sacred Heart football used to be extremely good.
Yeah.
I mean, they were outstanding. And they have fallen on tough times. And so we were just talking about how you can't, if you keep changing coaches left and right, whether they keep leaving or whether you keep forcing them out or a combination of both, you're going to have what? The program's going to go in the toilet or go downhill. That's exactly what's happened at Sacred Heart with their football program over the years. And now they're going to have their fourth coach in as many seasons. You can't build anything doing it that way. And maybe, you know, the previous three are leaving on their own accord and everything's happy-go-lucky and they've just got great opportunities. But that is not ideal for any sport, to have a four coaches in 4 years. That is not good at all. All right. You know, Ryan Isbell and Steve Tiernan have both coached track and field for quite some time, and that's why Ryan's hair is turning gray and Steve has none. But Dusty had a chance to catch up with the Beloit track and field head coach.
Welcome back here on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94, as we're joined now by Ryan Isbell, coach of the Beloit Trojan track and field teams. Well, coach, good news is you're home for your regional and have a chance to get a lot of your kids qualified for state here at this 3A regional and getting ready for that today. So just kind of looking at the regional, I know just on the girls' side, your team has won every meet that you've been a part of so far this year, so you're having a great season on that side. Boys, obviously, as far as team scores, hasn't been in that realm, but have had a good season with the throws. And Eli Johnson is really standing out there like he did a season ago, among others. But if you can, first look at this girls' side of things and the Lady Trojan track and field teams and how you stack up in this regional and what the competition looks like.
Yeah, sure. You know, first off, we're just really excited to be given the opportunity to host it. I mean, it's great for our kids. It's obviously a lot of work, and we got a lot of people to volunteer a lot of time to put this on. But for our kids to not have to travel and to be able to compete at home again, you know, that's great for them, just with their overall mindset and to be able to compete at a regional at your home track. And, you know, we're super excited for them. On the girls' side, you know, we've had a great season so far. The girls have really stepped up every week and competed really well. And for regionals, they're sitting pretty well. You know, they've put up pretty good marks all year, and they're seated kind of right where we thought they might be even at the beginning of the year. And when we start to project some things out, you know, there's as it's seated, you know, which things don't ever fall that way, right? But as it's seated going in, you know, the girls are right there with about four other teams, you know, within anywhere from three to really we'd probably say 7 or 8 points between us and southeast of Saline and Smoky Valley and Lakin. So there's just kind of a whole group. It's much like what we saw last year with the girls' side, kind of overall throughout the state, of just a lot of you know, quality across the board, whether it's field events or on the track. And you know, every team just brings kind of a different element, and when you're have all those different elements at the end of the day, then those team scores get bottled up, and it's where can you pick those points up along the way. And, you know, we think we've got three or four places where we can do that, where we can jump up. And you've always got those kids that surprise you, too. And that's we're excited for that, and we're really hoping for that.
On the boys' side, as we mentioned, you've had some success with some throws here this year. Eli Johnson is really toward the top of both the shot and discus in 3A, it looks like. And your guys have done what you've asked of them, obviously, this year. And just looking at where they kind of stack up with chances to qualify for state, obviously, it doesn't look good team-wise. And then what's the competition like? Sounds like there's some pretty good boys' teams at this meet as well.
Yeah. Speaking of just quality, I mean, it's boys and girls. We joke every year when we get to a coaches meeting, and it'll probably get said tomorrow, of welcome to state a week early. It's one of those where if you get out of your regional, you know you're going to do really, really well at Wichita next week. But on the boys' side, yeah, Eli's had a really great season, and both the shot and the discus has some really good marks. He's sitting second in both of those. So the state leader in 3A is a kid from Lakin, so he'll be here.
Mm-hmm.
So not only is he sitting second in 3A, he's sitting second in the regional in both of those. And you know, all those events, you know, you could just pull out a hat probably and say, well, these are the top kids in the state. Well, if you look at boy shot put as an example, you've got a kid that's thrown 59, a kid that's thrown 58, a kid that's thrown 55, a couple 53s, a 52. I mean, you don't see state meets like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll all be, you know, on display at this regional in particular. And that's just one example of it. But discus will be the same. You know, we've got a couple other guys, too, that, you know, Brody Boudreaux has had a great year. Is looking to get in as well. Brody Linton's had a good year. Bryce Beisner in high jump, you know, it's his first year out for track. And so it's just taking him a little while to come along in the high jump. And he's sitting kind of right on the cusp. He goes out and has a good clean day and sees how things go for him. And it could be a really, really fun day for him.
You know, one of the things that you look at with this, too, is like, so the top four qualify for state. But when we're going back and looking at the girls in particular, if you're trying for a team title, is like even those fifth and sixth place spots are pretty big for you, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. Obviously, you don't want your kids that are seated in the top four to slide to five or six. But any of those kids that can jump up and get some of those extra points with it being as close as it is, that's absolutely right, Dusty. I mean, every single point's going to count throughout the day. And those definitely don't get discarded. As much heartbreak as that goes into a fifth-place finish, you never want to see that at this, but those points certainly help out the team at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Had a great season so far, Coach. Ryan Isbell, the Bullet Trojans, here joining us on the Sports Ticket. We thank you for the time. We're looking forward to seeing everything here this afternoon, and best of luck today, Coach.
Yeah, appreciate your time, Dusty. Thank you.
And back on the Sports Ticket here on Kitty Country 94, Steve Tiernan is with us as the head coach of the Osborne track and field teams getting sent for regionals in Washington today. Coach, obviously you're familiar with this. You've been to this regional before, kind of going east. So there's I'm looking at the track tracker. There's a lot of these events that have, 9-10 kids from Washington and some of them that are in the top 16. So, you know, the competition will be very good. Your girls and boys have both had great seasons, Northern Plains League champions on both sides. As you look at regionals, what are your thoughts going in? We'll start first on the girls' side. I know you've got a lot of good throwers, and you've done good with relays and some things on the track as well.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, and I kind of stress this from the time we get going. We're not worried about the Osborne Invitational or the lacrosse track meet or the Smith Center Redmond relays or Beloit relays. I mean, you want to culminate all that we do has got to come together at regionals.
Mm-hmm.
So you just hope that you show up, and I'll try to show them as many people they're going to compete against, you know, at the regional. We always talk about how many days it is till then, just so that they're, so it doesn't just hit them all at once and they say, oh, God, this is a big one. Hopefully they're ready to go. And so far, all year except for one, the Mankato track meet, we didn't perform very well. But other than that, the girls have really come ready to go. And last week at league, I think we had like 5 or 6 PRs, so that's a good time to start doing your best. So hopefully that carries over.
I know you have a lot of them that are looking to make it back to state for the consecutive times, and not only in the girls, but also in the boys. You know, your boys are more with your relays and on the track with some of the sprints. And obviously, Nate Goheen's had a really good season for you. Just I don't want to single anybody out all the time, but he's one that's really performed well and looking to make it back to state in the hurdles. And when you look at the boys, what do you feel they stack up, and what's their progress going into regionals?
Yeah, kind of the same. I mean, they had a lot of PRs last week at league, and they run real well, like you said, Nate. Well, just I'm not going to mention everybody, but yes, he's one that started out in those riddles a little shabby, you know, when he started as a freshman, and he's just worked and worked and worked, and he's gotten where he's pretty good at him, and I think he's got a good shot to make it. Sam Kendig, I don't want to name names that many, but in the 300 hurdles has really gotten good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he's statewide. I mean, he's sitting two right now and not very far behind number one, so hopefully it all just comes down. I mean, like, I don't generally get too nervous at track meets other than the 4x1. I still hate the 4x1. The too many things can go wrong. Kind of like passing the ball in football, just too many things can go wrong. But the region always does just gets me kind of a little, I don't know about nervous, but, you know, you just worry about because these guys have done so well all year. Hopefully just bring it together at the right time.
And your experience, it's probably more stressful even for the athletes than it is to get when you actually do finally get to state, isn't it?
Oh, no doubt. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. As you get to state, you're done no matter how you did. You can win them. You could get last place no matter what you did. You're done. Saturday night, track's over. You know, this one you got an opportunity to get to the state, which is, and I even remind them this quite often, I mean, it's the biggest track meet, high school track meet in the nation. It's the only one that does all the classes together, so I kind of remind them of that, how many people will be there and all that, and that's just a great ending. Nothing to be, you know, worked up about for the fact that you perform great, good, you're done. You perform poorly, you're done. But the regional's the one that we kind of focus on it all year.
Steve Turner, the coach of the Osborne Bulldog track and field teams. Coach, thanks again for being with us here today. Best of luck to the athletes here out at Washington this afternoon and evening.
All right. Thank you.
Steve Tiernan, the track and field coach over at Osborne, as we have regional track today. And once again, Dusty will have reports.
Yeah, starting after 2 o'clock with our first report each half hour after that on Katy Country 94. KatyCountry94.com, I'll be listening there. And I'll be doing some updates with state qualifiers from 3A on Twitter as well. You can follow me there at Dusty40 or X, whatever you want to call it. 3A at Beloit, 2A at Hill City for Smith Center and Lincoln, and 1A at Washington County for all of our area teams this afternoon.
All right. I put a wrap on track.
It does.
For now. Of course, we have state track and field next Friday and Saturday, and the regional is happening on Thursday here today. We'll recap all of that tomorrow, and the report's coming up later today. Thanks to our sponsors for making all of that possible. Coming up, we got the Chiefs' full schedule release. We'll go over all of that. Also, the NBA NHL playoffs, as the guy that was going to make $1.7 million chickened out, and he sold out on his ticket for the Thunder to win the NBA Finals. And he cashed out a $100 ticket for $80,000. That's not bad consolation price. Not bad at all. Of course, if the Thunder come back and win the NBA title, he would have given up then $1,620,000. But good for him. That's coming up in regards to NBA playoffs. But now we turn our attention to Smith Center, as they have, well, Nick Lynn is finally going to hang it up. He's not going to be a volleyball coach. He's not going to be a basketball coach. I hear he's going to become the new football coach at Smith Center just for fun. No, I don't know that at all. But Nick Lynn, I know you've talked about him when I was gone, but you know, Nick's a heck of a person, heck of a coach, and a guy to have that much success throughout all of those decades and years coaching in two different sports and going to state, win state championships in two different sports is insane. It's just he is a dinosaur, and I mean that with the utmost respect. It's a huge compliment. There's not going to be another Steve Lynn in this area, I don't think, ever. And so I just want to thank him for everything. And he's also like volunteered or maybe got paid a little bit of money to umpire baseball when I was coaching Pee Wee baseball. Mm-hmm. He was umping baseball. We're like, dear Lord, man, do you have, I mean, he gives so much time. We talk about all the hours coaches put in. Think about how much he got paid over the course of his career on an hourly basis, probably negative $18 an hour. I don't know what it was, but, Nick Lynn, not only was he successful as a coach, but he had longevity and he probably had to deal with lots of stress and lots of ups and downs. And probably at times, I'm sure throughout his career, there's probably people wanted him to be done, and maybe he had the right people in his corner. Maybe simply some people, you know, back earlier in his career stood up for him instead of caving like people do now in some mm-hmm. situations. And so, you know, it goes back to the college story of Mike Krzyzewski. You know, if he would be a young coach now, he would never become Mike Krzyzewski. But back then, Duke was patient because it wasn't a big deal to struggle early on. Now you struggle at Duke for two or three years, you're going to probably be gone and not have a chance to really put it together. We see it in the NBA. We see it in professional sports and college sports where you just can't wait to win. So you act somebody and then you go back to step one of the process. So I'm sure Nick Lynn went through those highs and lows. But the new is the volleyball coach is official, right?
Yep, Denise Kattenberg. We talked to her yesterday, right. And you can find that interview on our Sports Ticket podcast at katycountry94.com if you want to listen to that one.
So she's going to be a new volleyball coach, and big shoes to fill there, no doubt, mm-hmm. but she's been on the staff. And now Brandon Raby's going to be the new girls head basketball coach at Smith Center, and big shoes to fill once again in this situation. And Dusty had a chance to catch up with the new Smith Center girls basketball coach.
Welcome back here on Katy Country 94, another Sports Ticket exclusive here as we're joined by Brandon Raby, the new head coach of the Smith Center Lady Red basketball team. Brandon, first of all, thanks for taking some time to be with us. I know people will be familiar with your name in the Lady Red program as your daughter Miley played there for years, and you have seen her move on to Kansas Wesleyan and play college hoops. And also, you've been leading the junior high program for the last 3 years. So your name's obviously known up there in Smith Center. You're not new to the area. What are your thoughts about taking over this position? And maybe for the people out there that aren't familiar with Smith Center, what's your kind of history in coaching and your background there?
Well, sure. I'm really excited to take over this program. I got some big shoes to fill from Coach Lynn. He's been here 35 years, and he's been doing a really, really good job and built a heck of a program. I've been coaching here for the last 3 years, junior high, and I've been coaching some club basketball up in Nebraska for the last 4 years. So I'm really excited to get started and get working with this program and working with these young girls that are coming back next year.
Yeah, we were talking off the air. You said you're 33-12 in junior high over the last 3 years. And with what you have coming back, again, obviously, you know the kids, the girls, the program, and then the girls that will be coming up from the junior high level and into high school. How do you feel about the group that you have and the talent level that's coming in maybe and that you're keeping as well?
Sure. This year, I met with the girls yesterday, and we're losing a really good senior class that was here and produced a lot of wins. So it's gonna be tough to kind of fill that back in. And I think we'll have like one senior coming back, two juniors, and the rest is gonna be filled with freshmen and sophomores. So I got one returning starter, but I'm really excited about the girls. All these girls, with the exception of one, I've coached in junior high. So. I'm pretty familiar with just about every single one of them, and I'm really excited to get started with them.
You know, one of the things I was talking about on the Sports Ticket on Tuesday was, or Wednesday actually, was that, you know, in Smith Center, when a legend, right, moves on, it seems like there's always somebody from the community that's ready to step into that role, and that's been the case in football with Coach Barta and then moving to Coach Sass and Coach Rogers, and now in volleyball with Coach Lynn and then Coach Kattenberg, who's been there for so long. And now you're familiar with the area. You're somebody in Smith Center. How does that help the continuity for what you're trying to do in your job as you move forward?
Sure. I moved to Smith Center about 12 years ago, since that time, moving to Smith Center 12 years ago, I've been able to watch Coach Lynn. The first year we moved here was when they won the state title, and I watched that, and my second oldest daughter Miley played for Coach Lynn for 4 years, and so I'm pretty familiar with Coach Lynn and what he was able to accomplish. And man, he built a heck of a program, and he was dedicated. Boy, he spent a lot of time working with those girls, making them better. So, you know, over the last 12 years, watching him, watching the success, you know, it's made it a little bit easier because some of these girls have wanted to live up to what he's built here. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I've got a lot of these kids that are coming back or have played club basketball, and they want to be Lady Red. They want to take it to the next level and kind of follow in the footsteps of what these other girls have done.
Looking at yourself, again, like you said, coaching 3 years of junior high and coaching some club basketball, obviously you've got experience as a head coach and have your ideas of how to have some success. So what are some of the things that we can expect from a Brandon Raby coach team as far as, you know, what you like to do offensively and the kind of the defensive schemes that you might run? Just I'm sure some of that's going to be based on the personnel that you have, but what are some of your philosophies on that?
Sure. Yeah, a lot of it is based on personnel and what you bring back. But what I look to do is I want to get the ball up the court really fast, move the ball quickly, push the tempo a lot. And defensively, I like to play a lot of man-to-man defense. We'll throw in a couple zones here or there, some zone presses and a couple man presses. But we want to push the ball up the court, and that the kids that I have coming back are trying to geared for that, and we've worked in the last few years. So I think we'll be able to do that. Well, like I said, we're pretty simple. You know, play really good defense, pick the ball up the court real fast, run a couple sets, but we'll get to things pretty quick.
Brandon Raby, the new head coach of the Smith Center Lady Red basketball team. Coach, we certainly thank you for taking some time. We'll look forward to working with you in the future, and best of luck here in this new gig.
Hey, thank you so much, Dusty. I appreciate your support with the Lady Red program, and I look forward to talking to you in the future.
Well, oh, you will. Dusty's going to be calling you about every other day. Need some interviews for locker room chats. Who knows what else? So, Brandon, you'll be so tired of Dusty calling you, you will regret the comment you just made. No, I'm just kidding. But that's relationships that we have with coaches. Dusty and I, we built those relationships with our coaches. Even the new coaches, I think, come in. We may already know them. We may not. But they already know from the previous coaches that, hey, we're respected. We're going to do a good job. We're going to talk to you. We're going to discuss this and so forth and so on.
We'll be your therapist when we're done with our locker room chat.
Oh, we should charge for that. There's no, but see, we can't charge a coach that's making negative 15 cents an hour.
Yeah, that's why
we feel,
you know,
wrong.
We're here together, you know.
We support you, and when we listen to everything, we're writing down and recording everything off the record so we can put in our memoirs when we retire and make a killing, and we will never be anywhere near you ever again, and we'll use it against you, and not a court of law, but in a book. Not a book. There won't be books down the line. It'll just be online. We'll just post a link.
There's definitely some audio clips that I still have.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, just don't tick us off. We'll turn on you so fast, just like the leaves change in the fall and the spring. But no, kidding aside, best of luck to Brandon Raby, best of luck to Denise Kattenberg, taking over and filling some big shoes with Nick Lynn, calling it quits and retiring from coaching. And what's going to wish Coach Lynn every bit of luck in his future as well. All right, the Chiefs' full schedule came out. More on that in 30 seconds.
I'm Elijah at Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Hot weather is here. Is the air conditioning in your vehicle nice and cold? If not, we can help. We have the training and equipment to service vehicle AC systems of all types, including the new refrigerant and late model vehicles. We offer same-day service on air conditioning with no appointment necessary. So don't sweat it out. Give us a shout. Fast, friendly service for your air conditioner can be found at Kiefer Brothers Automotive, just south of the courthouse in Beloit, or on the web at KieferBrothers.com.
And this is a sports ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Well, it's never too early to think football, especially when you're a Chiefs fan and you're the two-time defending champions. The two-time defending champions. I just like to say that.
I love it.
It's pretty awesome. So the Chiefs' full schedule was revealed last night. The Chiefs will play on six different days of the week, six different networks or platforms. They have eight standalone games with five in primetime. The Dallas Cowboys should be sued for saying anything about being America's team. They haven't done anything of noteworthiness since 1995. The Chiefs are America's team. These things are outdated and they should be changed, but people get stuck in their ways. The Chiefs are now America's team, and down the line in the future, somebody else will become America's team. Just because the Cowboys want to anoint themselves because God could see through the roof of some, have a roof into a football stadium. Okay. And do you think the Indians were really happy about the Cowboys becoming America's team? Probably not. Come on, Dusty. Have some fun with this. Cowboys and Indians, remember that game when you were little?
Yeah.
You know, who were the bad guys?
The Cowboys were the bad guys.
No. When you're playing Cowboys and Indians.
But technically, if they'd have done it right.
I know. I agree with you. But I'm saying, how was it portrayed and played when you were younger?
That's how it was portrayed.
The Indians were the bad guys. The Cowboys were the good guys. And so Cowboys became America's team, not the Redskins. You know, it was the Cowboys. Redskins won championships too. And so over time, things change. Okay, things change. And so the Chiefs are America's team. And if you need more proof of that, is the fact that Chiefs are going to play on six different days of the week this year. And if you don't know this already, the Cowboys are already grandfathered in on Thanksgiving Day. So don't sit here and tell me, well, the Cowboys are on Thanksgiving Day and the Chiefs aren't. That's grandfathered in. It's been that way forever, them and the Lions. They're always going to play on Thanksgiving Day. Okay? But the Chiefs, this is why they're America's team. Let me back up my point. We have an agreement to put a playoff game on Peacock. Who should we put on that game so that people will pay $5.99 for an initial fee to watch the Dolphins and the Chiefs? They didn't pick the Ravens and the Titans. They didn't pick They didn't pick anything. They didn't pick Cowboy game. They picked the Chiefs and the Dolphins. Now, why would they do that? Because the Chiefs are the most well-known franchise now. They are the most popular franchise now. You could say they're the most hated franchise as well.
Oh, yeah.
They have the most popular player in the National Football League. They have the face of the National Football League. In fact, you could argue they have two faces now because Kelce has come on the forefront because he has Tay-Tay as his girlfriend. He has his own podcast. He's going to be hosting a game show. For the love of God, he's going to be in some movie. The Chiefs have two faces of the NFL on the same team. And they win. So what better team to use, as I call them now, America's team, to get people to buy and pay? Even non-Chiefs fans will pay to watch the Chiefs hopefully lose if you hate the Chiefs, right? Or if you love the Chiefs, or you just want to watch Mahomes play, or you want to see, or how many people watched last year and paid the money to see Taylor Swift in the stands? The NFL ain't stupid. So the Chiefs are America's team. When you sit here, if you're a Cowboy fan listening, go, well, no, that's not true. We've always been America's team. No, you're not America's team anymore. Because if you were, you'd be the one chosen for that. Okay? You know, talking about baseball being America's favorite pastime is a bunch of crap. The only thing that's true about that is it is past its time. It's not America's favorite sport anymore. Hasn't been for years. In fact, for at least a decade or two. It is past time. Is it a popular sport? Yeah, it's still popular. It's a mainstream sport. But it's, no, the America's favorite pastime now is the NFL, except it's not pastime. It should be called America's present.
Man, America's now.
It's America's now. So the NFL is the most popular sport in America. It is not baseball. And the America's team in the National Football League is no longer the Dallas Cowboys, and it hasn't been for quite some time. You can keep labeling it that way because you're lazy, you don't want to change anything, who knows, with copyrights. You want more evidence? We talked about it the other day, Dusty and I have warned everybody for 5 years that these ball games, professional sports, college sports, going to go to streaming platforms. You're going to have to pay extra on top of what you're already going to pay for cable or fiber or whatever thing you're going to have, or Dish or Hulu or streaming, whatever. You're going to have to pay extra. Okay, so we saw that with Peacock last year with the playoff game, and everybody's like, "Well, we're gonna have to." Oh, I refuse to watch that. Well, guess what? You got so unified that they had record ratings for it. So that's not going away. In fact, that it just encourages the NFL to sell, because the NFL is very greedy, as most major corporations, multi-billion-dollar industries, they can't get enough money. Greed, as Michael Douglas said, is good. So what happens is now Netflix is going to have Christmas Day games. Two of them, okay? Netflix, which means that if you want to watch NFL games on Netflix on December 25th on Christmas Day, guess what you're going to have to do? You're going to have to pay, or at least do a trial run of Netflix, okay? Then don't forget to cancel it if you want to cancel it, and you will pay for it. Now, if you're already a Netflix subscriber, you're good. Doesn't matter. Same thing with Amazon on Thursday nights. But these are standalone games. The Peacock one was a standalone game. The only game on Peacock last year you had to pay for was the Kansas City Chiefs versus Miami Dolphins. So here we go. The Cowboys clearly are still America's team. That was just an exception, right, Dusty? That was just an odd situation where the Chiefs and Dolphins were just randomly selected. And there's no random about anything that the NFL does. No. So the Chiefs and the Dolphins were just randomly selected to be on Peacock. So, I mean, you're going to have two games, you're going to have four teams on Christmas Day, and Netflix is going to have it. Gee, I wonder who they might put on that one. Because as soon as I heard Netflix was going to get Christmas Day games, I'm like, you can go ahead and book it. The Chiefs will be one of the games.
Mm-hmm.
And they are.
Yeah.
Why are they? Because of the reasons I just gave.
Yeah, absolutely.
Taylor Swift, whether out, it doesn't have to be Taylor Swift. They were already doing this before.
That's but it adds. Added bonus.
It's an added bonus.
Yeah.
Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes, Chiefs are two-time defending champions. Listen, the Patriots got tons of primetime games when they kept winning. The Cowboys, when they were winning all the time, Cowboys still get more primetime games than they should. And they still got, you know, a brand or whatever you want to call it. So here's the Chiefs schedule. I'll just run through it here. And there are some interesting things about the Chiefs schedule. They have 8 standalone games, 6 of those at Arrowhead. 6 different days of the week. The only day they don't play during the week is Tuesday. That's right, they play on a Wednesday because of Christmas Day. They have 5 primetime games, 5 noon start times, which is better than last year. I think they had like 1 or 2. 2 Monday night football games, 2 Sunday night football games, 1 Black Friday game when they host Las Vegas, 1 Christmas Day game, which is at Pittsburgh, and that is on a Wednesday. Okay? So here's the schedule. Week one, the Chiefs open up. They kick off the NFL season. Two-time defending champions at Arrowhead. They'll drop the banner and everything else against the team they beat in the AFC Championship game in Baltimore. The Baltimore Ravens will play in Kansas City week one, Thursday, September 5th, to kick off the NFL season at 8:20, just like the Chiefs started last year with the Lions coming to home. So the Chiefs now, remember, the Cowboys are America's team. The Chiefs are back-to-back years kicking off the NFL season. They usually try to rotate that a little bit. Last 2 years, they like, we're not even going to mess with it. Yeah. Our marquee team is the Chiefs. We're going to kick out the season with Mahomes and the Chiefs on Thursday night. What a great way to kick it off. Oh, we're going to play Lamar Jackson Ravens. What a sexy matchup that is. Rematch the AFC Championship game. Boom. We got that one covered. Christmas Day. Oh, Netflix. But boom. We'll put the, I don't care who the Chiefs are playing. Doesn't matter. Chiefs will be on Christmas Day on a Wednesday. Now, one of the problems with the Chiefs being so damn popular, being so good, is that the schedule comes back to hurt them in many ways. We talked about how this year, towards the end, the last 6 or 7 weeks, the opponent always had more time off than they did. And yet they still found a way, didn't they? So apparently the NFL's like, well, they handled it last year. Why didn't they handle it this year? We'll get to that in a moment. So the Chiefs play on Thursday night, kickoff of the season at home against the Ravens. Then week two is a Sunday game against the Bengals. That's a tough start to your season. Ravens, Bengals, but both at home. Bengals at 3:25 at Arrowhead. Then week three, they're at the Falcons on Sunday Night Football. Week four, they're at the Chargers at 3:25. Week five, they take on the Saints on Monday Night Football in the evening on ESPN. Week six, they have a bye. That is not good. The bye is way too early.
I like that early.
I hate the bye. That hurts the Chiefs. Then they go to San Francisco, take on a team they've beaten in the Super Bowl 2 of the last 3 years. That's a late afternoon game. Then they're at the Raiders, late afternoon game. They host the Buccaneers on Monday Night Football on November the 4th. They'll host the Broncos on November the 10th. That's a noon game. They'll be at Buffalo, and that'll be a late afternoon game. That's week 11. Week 12, they'll be at the Panthers, a noon game. Week 13, the Raiders on a Black Friday. Week 14, Chargers, Sunday Night Football. Week 15 at the Browns, noon start. Week 16, which I think is a very intriguing game, the Texans come to Arrowhead on a Saturday. Then the Chiefs play the Steelers on a Wednesday on the road and then go to the Broncos for the final week of the season. So let me summarize a few things about the Chiefs. Between September, when I first saw this tweet by Matthew Derrick, we've had Matthew Derrick on the show many times, ChiefsDigest.com, does a great job covering the Chiefs. And when I first saw this tweet, I'm like, Matthew had to have miscalculated. And right away, I'm like, but Matthew is damn good at what he does, and I bet he didn't. And I told my son this, and he didn't believe it at first either. And I said, well, let me double check it. He was right. This is insane. You don't, for all you idiots out there, and if you are one of these idiots that thinks the NFL is rigged in favor of the Chiefs, tell me how this is rigged in favor of the Chiefs. Between September 15th and November 4th, that's a span of 50 days. That's 1 month, 1 2/3 months, almost 2 months. In a span of 50 days, September 15th or November 4th, you know how many home games the Chiefs will have at Arrowhead in a span of 50 days, which is 6 weeks?
Two?
One.
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 I didn't have it in front of me.
They play a game at Arrowhead, a Monday night game against the Saints on October 7th. So between September 15th and November 4th, the Chiefs play one home game. During that span, they'll play four road games with a bye in the middle. 50 days, one game at Arrowhead. After the first two back-to-back Sundays, Arrowhead. Mm-hmm. The Chiefs have a game on November 24th, 5 days rest before their next game. Have a game on December 15th, 6 days rest before the next game. Have a game on December 21st, 4 days rest before the game on Christmas Day. Their bye week is 35 days before that stretch even begins. So their bye week is way in the rearview mirror. And they play 3 games in 11 days. And this is where it's being irresponsible by National Football League. The Players Union allowed this to happen. They supposedly have this strong union. They allowed it to happen. The NFL allows it to happen. And so when the NFL tells you they're about safety, they are full of baloney. No team. No, I'm not just saying the Chiefs. I'm talking no NFL team should play 3 games in 11 days. We talked about high school football, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. We had a system at one point where there's 3 games in 10 days. Then we were able to adjust it. Finally, Keisha figured something out, and we had made some adjustments.
Yeah.
Okay? Nobody should be playing 3 games. No football team. Pee-wee contact football. Don't care. Tackle football. There should not be 3 games of any level of football in 11 days or 10 days. But it definitely shouldn't happen with guys that are just train wrecks running into each other. Like, I mean, you've heard players talk about it. It's like a car accident every time they go get hit. or they hit somebody. 3 games in 11 days. The NFL sits here and wants to give you this bunch of malarkey about they care so much about safety. If the NFL cared so much about safety, they wouldn't be trying to add games to their season. They wouldn't have added Week 17. Now Roger Goodell has said, and as a fan, you love when Roger Goodell says this. As a fan, 2 preseason games, 18 regular season games, that's what I'd like. That'd be perfect. And as fans are like, ah, that's awesome. As players, no, that's 2 more games, or now another game on top of 17. Well, you're going to play the whole game. Preseason, you played 4 preseason games. You had 16 regular season games. The starters didn't play a lot in the preseason. They played 16 games plus playoffs. Now, they're playing 17 full games plus playoffs, and the NFL eventually will probably get the 18th game in there. So not only do they not care about safety, they're adding more games into a schedule, which means less of an offseason. Less of an offseason, because the longer a season goes, the less the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got it. Then you want to make money on Christmas Day with Netflix. So then you squeeze 4 teams to play on a Wednesday, and you don't give them a bye. And here's where the Chiefs should have one of their buys. If they're the only team playing 3 games, yeah, 11 days, why the hell isn't there bye somewhere here? I know it's late in the year, but it's ridiculous. I don't get it. So if you're sitting here thinking the Chiefs and everything's rigged for them, I present Exhibit A. All right? Actually, Exhibit A and B. I mean, that is ridiculous. No team should have to play 3 games in 11 days. And it's already happened before. Don't get me wrong. It's already happened before. But that is ridiculous. And I said all along, the Thursday night football games, that is too short to turn around and play Sunday to a Thursday. They usually give you the Sunday after Thursday off. Oh, how sweet. 2 games in 6 days. And then you get a week off. Well, gee, you might need the whole season off if you're injured. Now, I know you don't get hurt all the time because you play 2 games in 6 days. But you need time to recover. And these guys are playing at the highest level of football in the entire world. And the Chiefs just happen to be that team. And I would say this, if it was the Chargers, the Broncos, or whoever else, 3 games in 11 days is insane. But this goes back to money. It always goes back to money. It always goes back to the NFL is making plenty of money. The NFL and their owners are making plenty of money to where they don't need a Week 17 game. They don't need a Week 18 game. They don't need more preseason games. They don't need to force 3 games in 11 days. They don't have to play on Christmas Day. You know what? There's been many years before in the past NFL they haven't played on Christmas Day. They don't have to do it. But they want to do it. Why do they want to do it? Because the billionaire owners are greedier than hell. All right, and the commissioner is paid for by guess who? The owners. The owners are. It's like Michael Douglas in Wall Street. Greed is good. These bleeping truckers. Okay, these guys. I want to curse so bad today because I'm fired up. These greedy money grubbing people have enough money in the world to help so many people that are less fortunate. And all they care about is adding to their bankroll to try to become one of the most rich people in America because it's some kind of competition. They want to become Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, I don't know. And at least Warren Buffett and Bill Gates, as far as I know, and I don't get too technical, political, if you don't care about those people, you do. But they're not creating a system where you have to work, you have to hit each other for 3 games in 11 days and adding physical harm to people. That's what the NFL is doing by adding games. And you can sit here and you say, well, the players don't have to play. They make enough money. They choose to play. That's true. Okay. But what I'm saying is the NFL doesn't need games on Christmas Day to survive. They're not hurting. It's a multi-billion dollar, with a B, billion dollar industry. They ain't hurting for money. But you know who's going to be hurting for money? Is when these guys get hurt or they don't have recovery time. And then are they going to have a good pension plan down the line? You know, is there going to be anything that's going to help them when they have this horrible, catastrophic leg injury or head injury? You know, NFL, they claim they're doing more for safety in regards to the head. And I think they have done that because they realized if we have a whole bunch of brain-dead players, our league ain't going to be so well, right? We got people getting paralyzed. That's going to hurt our sport. So they at least are smart enough to understand that. At the same time,
took a while to get there,
though. It did, and there was threats of lawsuits and everything else. But now they're going to put teams playing 3 games in 11 days. 6 days out of the week this year. There's only one day that's sacred this year, and that's Tuesday, which makes no sense. It's Sunday's religion day, right? And we play all the football on Sunday. Wednesday is kind of a religious day for some. And now that she's going to, and Christmas I thought was religious. So apparently, Christmas Day, you just can't sit home and, you know, actually talk to your family because you don't like your family. So you need to stare at a TV all day long. And so you're going to have NFL games on Christmas Day, and you're going to force people to pay on Christmas Day because, you know, they have tons of money left over from all the Christmas gifts they bought people, and that's if they can even afford Christmas gifts to give their kids, okay? And then you're expecting people to pay even more to watch the Chiefs play the Steelers in one other game on Christmas Day. And does the NFL need it? No. But they know you'll pay for it. The NFL knows that you'll do it because they are the greatest league in the world. They know you will fall hook, line, and sinker. They know you will complain. They know you'll still cough up the money if you really want it. You will fail to put money into your kids' college fund to make damn sure you can watch the Chiefs and the Steelers on Christmas Day. You will turn around your whole schedule and say, maybe we should have Christmas dinner on the Christmas Eve day so I can focus on the Chiefs-Steelers game at 3 o'clock or whatever time they're going to play, right? That's 1 o'clock. So there you go. See, it's at noon. Here's another one. Christmas dinner is usually when? Noon. At least in my family, it's always been that way. What time do the Chiefs-Steelers start on Christmas Day? Hell, the NFL can't even wait to get to 2 o'clock and let you kick back while you're after you're stuffed with food. They want you to watch at noon. The NFL don't give a bleep about you. They don't give a bleep about family. They don't give a bleep about the safety of the players. They are about, and I'm talking NFL, and the NFL, what they are is billionaire owners, some spoiled rotten, some inherited it, some worked very hard to get where they are and forgot where they came from. And maybe there's a few that are still pretty good. I don't know. I'm not in that class. I don't get to meet these rich people. But these rich people, all they focus on is making even more money and 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 more money. And they really don't care about the collateral damage it causes. That's called, sad to say, corporate America.
This Netflix Christmas Day thing broke like while I was doing the show yesterday, so I already kind of said my piece about it and got fired up like you did about it, right? Because the absurdity, it's not even about Netflix, like I said yesterday. That's not even what I'm worried about. I've got Netflix, so that makes it easy for me to say that. But I would go back, just real quick on that, I would go back to what we talked about during the playoffs with Peacock. You're paying to watch the Chiefs every week.
Yes.
Because you have a cable package or you have a internet streaming package.
You're already paying
for it. YouTube, whatever it is. You're paying for it anyway. You've not, unless you've actually been for the last 10 years getting even your broadcast stations over an antenna, you're still paying for your broadcast stations too. That's not free either. That's part of your package that you actually have to pay for. So that's no different than what you're already doing. It's more. You're paying more. I get that. But you're still paying to watch the Chiefs for the last however many years you've been doing it.
Probably. Yeah, it's kind of like going to the all-inclusive resort out of the country, and you're like, oh, I get all these free drinks. No, you already paid for it. You just don't know exactly how it breaks down to how many drinks
this
you...
This monthly bill that you're paying for, you're actually paying more than you think probably
that's
to
right.
watch the Chiefs because you don't watch anything else on your
that's
cable
right.
package.
You should be paying $20 a month like the Royals and just watch the Chiefs, but you're paying for all the other programming at $70, $80, $90, $100 a month or more.
Yeah.
And you watch two channels.
So that's my piece about the Netflix part of it. I was unbothered by that yesterday because I know, like I said, like we've been saying for 5, 10 years, however long it's been, that this is where we're going. So I'm unbothered by that part. The absurdity of playing a game on the 21st of December and then playing a game on the 25th of December. And I know we do it with Sunday to Thursday football games already during the season, but think about that in your head. You're playing a game on Saturday. You get Sunday off. Mm-hmm. You get practice because you're not going to practice on Sunday. You get practice Monday and Tuesday, and you're back on the field Wednesday at noon.
You may practice Tuesday. You're going to travel day.
Yeah.
You play noon on
Wednesday.
Yeah,
you're going to Pittsburgh. Yeah, yeah. If you're the road team,
you
might get a walkthrough in the morning before hit the plane and go off to Pittsburgh. So,
and for those players and families, there is no Christmas Day together on Christmas Day.
Yeah, and so here's the thing. And undoubtedly, if the Chiefs do well, somebody's going to say they're rigging this thing for the Chiefs. So like you said, but the absurdity of having your premier team, your prime team in your league playing 3 games in 11 days at the end of the season when it might be a situation where they're fighting for position in the playoffs and you're making them play 3 games in 11 days, that's not helping the Chiefs. You're not giving them any favors here by doing that. And what makes that even worse is you're playing 3 games in 11 days and you know for a fact that that could lead to more injuries and more issues because there's not enough rest time for your body to get back right to game play and be in the situation to get out there on the field and do what you need to do. So you could risk more injuries and have your best team going into the playoffs with hobbled players and not being able to play.
Which could hurt your ratings and
so
money
why,
there.
So the NFL's giving the Chiefs favors because they haven't been doing it anyway. And last year's schedule was pretty good indication, and this year's even more indication.
And not only that, but the last two of the three in 11-day span are on the road.
Yeah.
Like, could you at least make 2 of the 3 at home?
Yeah.
You couldn't put Christmas Day game for the Chiefs at home?
Probably didn't want to do it 2 years in a row or whatever. I don't know.
But, yeah, don't sit here and come at me with the Chiefs. It's all rigged for them. If you say anything, you'd say it's rigged to make it harder than ever because they don't want anybody to three-peat. I think it would be great for the NFL to have somebody that three-peated, because now you've got something you never had before. So if you believed in rigging it, they should change the schedule to help the Chiefs more, and they don't.
Yeah.
So they're not rigging that part. Now, maybe the Chiefs get in the playoffs, but like you said, they could have all kinds of injuries because of this at the end of the year. And then, you know, you want to rig it till they win in the playoffs, but you can't because the Chiefs, Kelsey's out, or Mahomes is hurt, or whatever the case may be. So, you know, in regards to the strength of schedule, Ravens, Bengals start the year at home. Two home games, but two very tough teams. That's a tough start to the schedule. At Atlanta, at Chargers, obviously winnable games. Jim Harbaugh is going to save the day in L.A., and the Chargers are going to win the AFC West. Yeah, right. The Saints are average. The 49ers, they'll probably lose that game in San Fran because the Niners will apparently know what the overtime rules are during the regular season. At the Raiders, the Buccaneers, you know, not what they once were. Broncos, you know, who knows what they got at quarterback at that time. Maybe it's Bo Nix. At the Bills aren't maybe as good on paper, but that'll still be a tough game. At the Panthers, they're trying to build something. Raiders, Chargers, at the Browns, you know, that's a team that's, you know, it was good last year. The Texans is an intriguing game. So that's the other thing. Texans is going to be a tough game on December 21st, and then you got to turn around and play Christmas Day at Pittsburgh. And at the Broncos, I guess the only thing you got to hope for if you're the Chiefs, the only thing that saves you a little bit is if you could have everything wrapped up before that Bronco game in Denver to where you can get that extra rest, even, and then maybe you only play the two games in 5 days instead of playing the third and 11 for the better players for you, but you still got only so many on the roster. So anyway, more to say on that as we get closer to time. And it's May, and we're going crazy about the Chiefs' schedule, for crying out loud.
The Boston Celtics have punched their ticket to the Eastern Conference Finals for the sixth time in 8 years.
The Celtics win 113-98 over the Cavs, Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Semifinals. No Donovan Mitchell again. A couple other players didn't play. Dean Wade had to play a lot. I didn't look at the box score. I meant to do that to see how Dean Wade played. But the guys on inside the NBA there, Barkley and Shaq and Kenny, were kind of making fun of Dean Wade just slightly. I think they were kind of insinuating that Dean was in over his head in that situation. I don't know. It just kind of came across that way to me. And when I saw the highlights, he did seem to, the highlights were not kind to Dean Wade. Let's just put it that way. Dean Wade played 22 minutes last night and took only three shots. It was one of three, hit a three, two rebounds, two assists. So, but they were getting, I mean, Dean Wade doesn't play much in the playoffs there in his career so far. And then, but they had to play more than normal last night with all the injuries. So, Dean Wade, though, in the NBA, so you make fun of Dean Wade all you want, but if the guy's in the NBA, he's cashing a check, and he's still pretty good if he's in the NBA. There's no doubt about that. So the Celtics await the winner of the Pacers-Knicks series. Pacers-Knicks, that's 3-2 Knicks. They're going to Game 6 in Indianapolis. That's tomorrow night. I assume the Pacers are going to win Game 7 Madison Square Garden. And the Celtics can rest. In the West, the Mavericks picked up another crucial road win. They beat the Thunder 104-92 in OKC. Very disappointing to me. I'm a Thunder fan, and I have been, so don't sit here and say, oh, you jumped on a wagon. No, I have been, although I'm just not a gigantic one. Luka Doncic's a triple-double, his best game of the series, 31 points, 11 assists, 10 rebounds. Dallas has up 3-2 in the series. Game 6, the Timberwolves-Nuggets is tonight. Denver up 3-2. Dusty and I both rode off the Nuggets after they're down 2-0. And now I'm riding off the Timberwolves. That's how it works. And that's why you don't want to jump to conclusions too quickly. 3-2 was the lead for Denver now. Have the chance to close it out. 7:30 on ESPN. You know, Barkley went off a little bit the other day when people were talking about how Mike Malone and Nuggets use what he said the Nuggets were done and so forth and so on. That he said the Minnesota was going to sweep the Nuggets after they were up 2-0. And Barkley came back at that. And I thought he made some interesting points. I mean, listen, if you need extra bulletin board material to get yourself fired up, so be it. Use it. I thought the Nuggets would win Game 3, and then I thought it might, who knows what happens to Game 4, but I thought Timberwolves would win the series after being up 2-0. But Barkley, I thought, made a very astute point, and that is, everybody's getting all riled up because I predicted the T-Wolves would beat the Nuggets. How many of you had the Nuggets winning the series when they were down 2-0 and the Nuggets got blown out in both games at home? Raise your hand if you had the T-Wolves winning the series. So if you're going to go all nuts about Barkley talking about the T-Wolves are going to win the series, he just was bold enough to call it a sweep, but not much different. He said the T-Wolves are going to win the series. And he's right. He said, listen, if you actually watch the two games like I did, was there any reason to believe the Nuggets were going to win the series? No. He said, so I changed. He goes, I've been picking the Nuggets last year, this year, and I was like, I didn't believe in the T-Wolves. Well, guess what? I used my eyes, and I saw the T-Wolves look like they're ready for prime time. They just kicked the Nuggets' butt twice in Denver. And going back home, he goes, you're thinking they're at least getting one out of two in Minnesota. They'd be up 3-1 going back to Denver. He goes, so it's not so crazy to say think that I would say something like that. And he's right. Because he said, we can only go off of what we just saw. I can't predict the future, even though he was kind of like, oh, T-Wolves. Mm-hmm. But he was saying, based on where the things are going, the way the first two games went, this I can see being a sweep. And that's true. You can only go with what you've seen. And the evidence proved that the Nuggets were in deep trouble. Well, guess what? They figured some things out. And 3-day break after game two, which I don't understand the NBA schedule at all. You play one game, you have a day off, you play another game, then you have 3 days off, and then you play a game, then a day off. It's like, just randomly, we got 3 days off in the middle. That helped the Nuggets tremendously.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because Jamal Murray got healthier. And everybody can talk about Jokic being an amazing player, and he is. He's NBA MVP, had a heck of a game of the night. But Jokic can have, for him, pedestrian numbers. 20 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists. That's pedestrian for Jokic. That's how great he is. If he has a gigantic game, yeah, Nuggets have a very good chance of winning. I get that. But Jamal Murray usually can't have pedestrian numbers for this team to win in the playoffs. So the first two games, Jokic put up good numbers. Murray was bad. And they got blown out both games. All of a sudden, Murray gets 3 days off, gets healthier with his calf strain, plays great the last three games. I'm telling you, Jokic is the MVP, and rightfully so. But the Nuggets go as Jamal Murray goes.
Oh, it's
because
been that
Jokic
way.
Is way yeah. more consistent. So Jokic is always going to give you your 20 and your 10. And then, you know, if he goes off for 35 and 15, well, now that helps you compensate if Murray's not so great. But Murray has to play well, in my opinion. Not great. There's games where he can play decent, good. But when Murray plays poorly, this team doesn't win.
Injuries that Jamal Murray has had throughout his entire career have derailed a lot of Nugget playoff series.
Torn ACL.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. And that's why last year I was so bullish on the Nuggets, because I was like, if Jamal Murray's healthy, they're not a team that's beaten this one in a 7-game series, just based on the way they were constructed last year. And it all hinged on Jamal Murray staying healthy and being good and productive. It's going to be the same case, especially this year, when I don't think the Nuggets are as good as they were last year. They need Murray healthy and to perform at the highest level that he can for them to have the success. It's obvious, we've seen it already. And so, you know, if they want to have that success and try to repeat as champions, he's got to be there doing those things. And nobody does it by themselves. I mean, we've never seen that. Really?
No.
I mean, everybody needs somebody to be their
Everybody sidekick. Needs somebody. Isn't that a song maybe I've heard once before?
Probably so, yeah.
I'm sure somebody made some cheesy song like that. But, you know, it goes back to when we've talked about this before. You know, Jordan didn't win championships by himself. He needed Pippen to come along. Mm-hmm. He needed Horace Grant to mature. He needed Phil Jackson to be his coach, you know. You know, Shaq and Kobe weren't winning championships until Phil came in. And Kobe wasn't winning titles without Shaq. And Shaq wasn't winning titles without Kobe. And then Kobe found out about that when Shaq left. And then once they got Pau Gasol, you always need help. No matter who you are, you can't do it by yourself. And, you know, I still think a pitcher in baseball is the one that controls more than any other sport.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
But you at least need one other person to catch the ball.
Yeah.
But technically, all you need is scratch across one run, which you still need. But you could be a hitter, too, and you could hit a home run, and you could pitch a complete game no-hitter, and you can dominate, and you really don't need anybody else's help, although you're probably not striking out all 27 batters. So somebody defensively had to make a play at some point. But
absolutely,
that's the only sport I can think of out that's in a team sport where an individual can pretty much control quite a bit. You know, some people argue the quarterback, but we talked about
somebody
that recently. Somebody's got to catch the ball. Somebody's got to block. Nobody's got to block for you in baseball. But you got to have help. And you know, when I'm watching OKC last night, SGA didn't have enough help last night. If he gets the help he normally does, SGA is fine. But he didn't get the help last night. What happened in game four when the Mavericks missed free throws down the stretch? Luka missed a free throw. Irving didn't have a great close. They didn't get enough. The Mavericks didn't get enough from other players. Last night they did. And I thought Barkley said another thing that was very astute. He said, listen, I know Irving and Doncic are closers and they're really good at closing games, but he said the Mavericks are better when those two guys take they back up a little bit and they get everybody else involved. And then suddenly guys like Derek Lively's doing dunks, and you got Derek Jones hitting threes, and you got PJ Washington involved. And I'm thinking that sounds exactly what it was back in the Jordan days, mm-hmm. and the Kobe Bryant days. When Jordan was, you know, let's call it what it was. Sometimes he was selfish. He thought he could do it himself when he was really young. He scores 63 and loses an NBA playoff game. Jordan realized as he got older, and that's when they started winning championships, that one, he started to trust his teammates because they developed. Two, he knew to get them involved so they were ready to go, and then he could take over if he had to later. He understood that balance. Mm-hmm. Kobe did the same thing. Kobe eventually learned the same thing. That's why Kobe and Michael, to me, are always the better comparison, not LeBron and Michael. Michael and Kobe were very more similar than LeBron. LeBron's kind of on his own planet in regards to the type of player he is. And don't get me started on who's the greatest of all time, because you're not going to get me to bite on that today. I think it is sometimes when you have ball-dominant players where they have to have the ball in their hands all the time. And it happens to the Mavericks a lot. I've seen it. Now, this year, it's been better. But there are people that have talked about how Luka bounce, bounce, bounce. It's like that commercial with, what's his name? Bogdan Bojanovic or whatever, the guy with the big ears.
Yeah.
Bounce, bounce, bounce. He's doing play-by-play. Yeah. Boban. Play-by-play for State Farm. Bounce, bounce, bounce. He bounced it again. He bounced it again. He bounced, bounce some more. Bounce, 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 pass. Bounce, bounce, bounce. That's what Luka does sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what happens?
Not good things.
No. And that's exactly what happened to the Thunder when they played the Golden State Warriors. When they were up 3-1, they moved the ball, and Durant and Westbrook understood they had to get everybody involved. And then they were one win away, and then they got away from it, decided to play hero ball, and it was bounce, 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 pass. And then you throw it to a guy when you're doubled, and they're not ready to make the shot because they're not got a rhythm. They're not involved. Your great players have to get your other guys involved. And if they're involved for at least the first three quarters, yeah, you can take over in the fourth. That's what star players are supposed to do. Last night, SGA, he just didn't get enough help. The Thunder missed a ton of wide open threes last night. Mm-hmm. Didn't make them. And the Mavericks made them. And so going to game six, everybody assumes that the Mavericks are going to close it out. And they very well might not. But you have to have help in order to get something done. Turning to the NHL playoffs, Colorado Avs stayed alive last night.
The Avalanche come up with three goals in the third period. The first time they led all series long. And now they are very much alive in the series, but still trailing 3-2.
So the Avs are down 3-2, but they stay alive last night. Tonight, Eastern semis, the Rangers up 3-2 on the Hurricanes. They're up 3-0, and now it's 3-2. Game 6 in Raleigh at 6 o'clock. In the West, the Canucks and Oilers are tied at 2 apiece, with Game 5 at 9 o'clock in Vancouver. You know, teams are down 3-0 in hockey playoffs. I think that's the sport that there's been the most 3-0 comebacks, down 3-0 and win a series of four straight. Of course, in baseball, that's only happened, what, the one time? Red Sox and Yankees? I think that's the only time. There's mm-hmm. teams that have been down 3-0, won the next three, but lost Game 7. But the NBA, I think I read this correctly, the NBA's never had down 0-3.
Nope.
Come back and win. So, concluding the show this way, who the heck was I talking about? Timberwolves. Timberwolves and Nuggets. Who wins tonight?
I got Denver.
So we have shifted completely.
Yeah,
which the means moment put they your won, money on the T-Wolves.
Yeah, the moment they won the second game in Minnesota, I was like, series over.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to win the next two.
Well, and Conley being hurt does not help at all. So I tend to agree that the Nuggets are going to get it done game six tonight. Pacers, Knicks?
I'll pick Pacers tonight.
Tonight? I agree seven. With you. And then do you think the Thunder win game six in Dallas?
I don't.
You don't? Okay, you think that one's over as well?
Yeah.
All right, so put all your money on it.
I don't want either team to win as a Spurs fan. Like I'm sitting here thinking of who I would want to win that game. I'm like, no.
Right.
I don't want either one of them.
No.
So I'm not going to cheer for either one of them. It's just whatever happens. I was actually, at this point of the playoffs, I was a Timberwolves fan for sure.
Yeah.
Like, I really wanted to see them do it because mm-hmm. we just saw the Nuggets do it last year. Hard for me to cheer for a team in Denver. And so it's like, yeah, let's just move forward with the Timberwolves and then – things fell apart.
But they're not all the way they're not dead yet. I mean, if the T-Wolves game wins game six, guess who the pressure's on?
Denver, for sure. Yeah.
In Denver.
Yeah.
So
as the defending champions, for sure, so on their home court.
And maybe the Denver's getting a little bit overconfident, kind of like I think the T-Wolves were after the first two games.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.